Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests are Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News, Rosemary Shinohara of the Anchorage Daily News, and Sean Dugan of Channel 11 News. Steve, the windstorm of the century hits South Central Alaska and Anchorage specifically, leaving a trail of damage that few can remember anything like in this region. Tell us more. What happened?
Boy, what happened? Yeah, we really got whacked pretty good. Usually this is sort of like reserved for people along Turnagain Arm or maybe up on the upper hillside. This was citywide. Everybody felt the brunt of this wind. Some of the winds were officially recorded, certainly well over 100 miles an hour. There was one unofficial recording of about 130 mile an hour gusts. That was up at Glen Alps. A lot of damage done to trees. A lot of birch trees that got waylaid in all of this. There's some big trees that were out, some trees that fell and hit houses. But probably the biggest impact was on the electricity. As we taped this show on a Friday afternoon, there's still about 3,000 to 4,000 people who do not have power in Anchorage right now. And it may take a couple of more days before everybody
has
power.
And those people who call up and say they don't have power, what are they being told?
Well, I think the crews are just overwhelmed. There were so many lines that were down. So they've contracted with crews from outside. The power companies have. They're trying to get as many people on board to help fix these lines. Now, kind of reminds me a little bit of the winter snowfall, where there was so much snowfall, they couldn't get it all off the streets. They were hiring contractors to come in and take the snow away as well. They just didn't have enough equipment to handle all the snow.
And which companies have how many people who are out of power?
I think Chugach has the most. MLMP, I think, still has some folks who are out, but I think Chugach has the most right now. You know, and I think the thing that sticks out the most for me on this, aside from the fact that there's so much power that's been turned off right now, is that we normally get these storms in the wintertime. We don't really see big wind events early in September like this. Some of the meteorologists say that some of the damage was exacerbated by the fact that there were so many leaves still on the trees, and that caught more
and sap
wind
in the bark.
Yeah, right. So, but you know, you wonder. We had this monstrous winter where we had the record amount of snowfall. We had kind of a coolish summer, which I guess can happen. And then in September, early September, you get this monstrous windstorm as well. And our weather is really out of whack right now.
Thank you. Sean, do we have any idea of the cost of the damage, cost?
The short answer is no, because as Steve mentioned, they are still cleaning up, so the costs continue. Now, we did talk to Chugach yesterday. They said they estimate about $750,000 on their part, and that actually seems kind of low to me. I think something like 36 substations were put down, and as Steve mentioned, 4,000, 3,000, 4,000 people.
A lot of that will be overtime, I assume.
Overtime. They're pulling crews off other projects, and they got to get back onto those other projects. Now, interesting, the city also is having to clean up. As you know, we lost the 50-year-old flagpole, that giant Sitka spruce down there at the Veterans Memorial. But with the city, of course, they have different departments, so it depends on where the damage is. If the tree's in the street, that comes out of street maintenance budget. If the tree's fallen in a park, that's Parks and Rec. If the tree's on a power line, then it's MLMP. So I really don't think we're going to see a total number on the cleanup of this for quite some time now, at least weeks.
And are people insured? Are the insurance companies busy?
Fairly busy. You know, I talked to State Farm yesterday, 66 claims. You'd think there'd be more, Rosemary might actually have a personal story about that as well, because she was without power.
Rosemary, you were without power, now you have power.
I was without power, now I've got power, but a bunch of shingles blew off our roof, so I called the insurance company and they had to find out about the deductible and all that, and they really discouraged me from filing a claim. They said, you know, unless it's really high, don't do it, it'll be on your record.
You know, I think permanent record.
What some of the advice that we had gotten from some of the insurance companies in town: photograph your damage, because they're not able to get to all the damage and see firsthand the claim. So they're saying take good photographic evidence, take lots of photos, and get all the paperwork, have the work done, and then we'll catch up with you later.
Either one of you gentlemen have talked to the insurance companies, know If my tree falls on Steve McDonald's car, who files?
It depends on what kind of coverage you have. Short answer on that one.
Good. We'll take lots of photos of that. We'll make sure we have lots of
camera evidence for sure.
Rosemary Shinohara, the Anchorage Daily News, for the first time that I can remember, printed two newspapers in one day, and it wasn't a special edition. It was the Wednesday edition and the Thursday edition, both on Thursday. But more significantly, perhaps, there was quite a bit of physical damage over at the Daily News parking lot and grounds.
Yeah, I've heard there were, up to 20 trees that went down. We had a lot of ornamentals, these purple trees, that just kind of all
and
went.
Some mountain ash and
they just
birch.
Came uprooted. The power went out right when the Daily News was going to press at about 1:30 in the morning, and stayed out all night. And we've never had that happen before. And came back on about 7, and then they started producing papers. And they didn't do home delivery because all the delivery people are, you know, have other jobs during the day. So they took papers out to the stands and the shops and delivered the Wednesday paper on Thursday with to home delivery people.
And it was quite a scene over at the Daily News. I was over there early on that morning, and I walked up and it was still dark, and you really couldn't, you'd see these shapes, but you weren't quite sure that what they were until you realized these are trees that used to be standing tall and aren't anymore. Okay, let's move on to Rosemary once again. You had a long Sunday story on the cost of medical care in Alaska, and talked about the fact that some people are going outside by choice to the States, as we used to call it, for medical care, or some cases their insurance is suggesting that they do this. Why don't you give us some more detail on this very interesting and illuminating story?
Well, the most interesting thing to me was that insurance, a big insurance company like Blue Cross, Premier Blue Cross, Blue Shield, is actually setting up a program for like a third of its customers up here. It has at least half the commercial insurance in the state. And to where a company, an employer that uses Blue Cross Blue Shield can accept the offer to pay for people to have hotels and rental cars and a companion if they're taking surgery outside. And what that means is that it's just so much more expensive here for some kinds of procedures like.
And you detailed them. There were gave a number of examples.
One of them was we only had the doctor's fees available. And the amount that the commercial insurance will pay for a doctor in Alaska, which is driven by what are the doctors charging. And like for a knee replacement in Alaska was $7,500. And outside it was in five states, comparable states in the West, North, and Northwest, it was $2,000. And then of course there's all the hospital charges and the cost of the knee itself that you're buying.
But this was an ability on your part, or the research that you did from others who did even more detailed research, to show apples compared to apples. This was
I think people
for the same service in different venues.
Right. Yeah, and the doctors, and one of the conclusions of a report that I read before as I was writing this story was that doctors up here, they incur more expenses in their office. You know, there's like your medical aids and your office rental and all that. But they're also more highly compensated amongst many of the doctors, many of the specialties. Your family doctor, your internist is not as far out of line as the other doctors.
And many of these specialists were compensated considerably above places like Washington and Oregon, which are frequently high expense places themselves.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Okay, thank you very much. The question, the voting is over, but the counting continues. Sean, we have a few, you weren't here last week to participate in our little roundtable on the election. We'd like to hear what the view was over Channel 11.
I will give that to you, but you asked me before the show to give you a reminder about two things, a permanent fund and zombies, so we don't want to forget to talk about that.
I think if we're going to talk about politicians, we should talk first about zombies, so go right ahead.
All right, well, you want me to do zombies first, or you want me to do the election?
I think we better do the permanent fund dividend first, because that's what everybody really wants to know.
Okay, so we did our annual calculation. We've been pretty lucky with our formula that we've come out with, and we've come up with $863.99. Now, adjusted for inflation, that's the third or fourth lowest, but remember, all you really had to do was breathe in and out for a year and then fill out.
Do you
want
to say that number again for anybody who wasn't?
$863.99. So thanks for hanging me out there. So if it's a lot less or a lot more, I'm sure you can send your emails to Mike on that one. The other real quick is zombies. There's a national trend that's hit Anchorage. The city is actually partnering with the state to use zombies to teach you how to be prepared in the event of a disaster. So they're going to create a zombie apocalypse, saying that the things that you would do in a zombie apocalypse are the things that you should do in an earthquake or a flood, a tsunami, or a big wind event. So they're trying to kind of, you know, make it more interesting, I guess, using zombies. And interestingly enough, the press release, the big bold headline said, please don't shoot the zombies. Apparently the city is going to be shooting a commercial downtown with a bunch of zombies.
And these are presumably local people who are skilled actors playing
zombies. We would hope that they are actors and not true undead. But getting back to your original question.
About the election.
The election, the important stuff. So 24%, I think Steve told us before the show, that we're up to. To me, the real interesting things was who lost. Linda Menard got beat out in the Valley by Mike Dunleavy. Now, he is a Tea Party-backed candidate. The Tea Party's pretty well established, and they got a good organization out there. The other interesting one was Tom Wagoner down there on the Kenai Peninsula got beat out by, I think it's Pete Michiti.
Michiki.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And he works for ConocoPhillips, but has been on the record as saying that he is not going to just roll over for oil companies in the big debate. Of course, this all goes back to the Senate majority. Is it going to be a bipartisan majority this year? And what does that mean for the governor's oil taxes? You know, the money that you're going to see in the general election, I think, is going to really be directed at that specific, that dynamic.
Well, I'm wondering if in a general election, to some degree, well, it's to a large degree, the audience is different because many more people participate. Mm-hmm. And Republicans are overly represented by their choice and the people who turn out in a primary election. If the same story about the coalition is going to be as sellable in a general election, vote for me because I'm against the coalition. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know how that's going to play out, but I will tell you what I do know is that people on both sides are going to be spending a lot of money, that's obviously going to be the number one issue, is whether you should vote for this person or that person, especially when you're looking at the state Senate, is how do they stand on oil taxes? I don't want to say it's going to be a litmus test, but I think that's going to be the bellwether issue when people go into the voter's box, and you can expect to start hearing those commercials any day now if they're not already out there.
They're already out. Back on the radio.
Steve, we didn't have the opportunity to hear mm-hmm. from you last week either, so your mm-hmm. wisdom following on Sean.
Well, Sean's right. I think it is going to be a litmus test. It's already started. There's a radio ad that's airing right now where the person's talking about, you know, I was look at the issues, get out there and vote, and I want, you know, to see Alaska's resources developed and oil taxes I don't know if it comes right out and says we want to see them change, but we want to see them debated at least. So there's already that spot that's out there. So I think we're getting ready to see that will be a litmus test. The Michiki-Wagner race, the Dunleavy-Menard race, I just found it kind of ironic that the Republican Party aims at this coalition, Democratic coalition, Democrats and the Republicans, and the two people who really get it are Republicans. They're the ones who get knocked off here. Of course, there weren't any really big head-to-head Democrats.
Don't you think
races.
It's interesting? They didn't run a primary candidate against Gary Stevens, who was the president of the coalition, mm-hmm. or Bert Stedman, who was the co-chairman of the finance director of the coalition. That must mean they couldn't find anybody or didn't think they could beat him and didn't want to spend the money.
I would think either one, take your pick on that. And you just can't say, the campaign against coalition worked, because you go up in the Fairbanks, Click Bishop won his race, right. And he refused to do the I'll sign the pledge that says I'm not going to join the coalition.
This is for an open Senate seat.
It's open for Senate seats. And he beat Ralph Seekins was in that race. Yeah. He was trying to make a comeback. So Seekins is pretty well known in the Fairbanks area. But Bishop won that race, and he didn't make the pledge. He didn't sign the pledge. So, you know, across the board, you can't say that the fight against the coalition won out in all the races. So
let's go back to one more detail with Sean. Sean, in the renewed counting, which got us up to close to 25%, Proposition 1 looks like it turned around, the tax proposal.
Yeah, Proposition 1 would give local jurisdictions the ability to knock off, I think it's another $50,000 worth of property tax value. Of course, whether or not, regardless of whether that passes, each jurisdiction would have to pass its own version of that or authorize it, and then I believe it even goes back to the state for their okay. So what does it mean when it passes? I don't know how many municipalities are going to take advantage of this. I know Mayor Sullivan was against it. Some other mayors were because they feel that it puts an undue burden on businesses because then the tax burden is shifted.
I believe that the communities that were most anxious to see this pass were Fairbanks, mm-hmm. Valdez, other communities that have the pipeline
right.
in there.
And
in
the big military bases
right.
as well.
And
now they pay in lieu of taxes, right. but you're right. Yeah, those, because the biggest contributor to the Fairbanks North Star Borough, I think as far as property taxes, is Alyeska. Mm-hmm. The pipeline goes from the northern part all
although
the way
Although if
through.
I recall, I'm sure that about this as a general proposition, the local governments have limits on how much they can tax the pipeline.
They do.
And that this has been established both in policy and in court cases, right?
Yeah, they do. So, what is the end result of this? I don't know, but I think it's interesting. That one was the closest one of the night, along with the Davis-Crawford race, and she appears to have extended her lead over Harry Crawford. It looks like she's going to win the primary, go up against Anna Faircloth in the general as well.
Once again, I'm Michael Carey. I'm here with Steve McDonald, Rosemary Shinohara, and Sean Dugan. Rosemary, West Anchorage is about to get a quote-unquote mixed development complete with a bistro. What is a mixed development and why is it going into West Anchorage?
A mixed-use development is a combination of commercial and residential property in one area or one property, and it's meant to be a more walkable area than most of Anchorage is. It's like you can live somewhere and walk to someplace to eat or walk to someplace to go to the gym. And we do have mixed use developments in Anchorage on like Spinard Road, Mountain View Drive. Cook Inlet Housing has put in some buildings with residents on the top and businesses on the bottom.
Although I think the use of the word bistro is to suggest something more like Portland or San Francisco.
Yeah, it's definitely Denver. Yeah, it's definitely a modern concept, and it's something that we don't have in neighborhoods right now. We do have it on commercial areas, but. So this is something new for a neighborhood.
And if you're interested in moving into such a neighborhood, how long is it going to be before this would happen?
Well, they were trying to get started this year. It's not a big project, but it's they ran into a utility problem. So it may be next year before it's done. I don't know. They're trying to start it this year. They haven't resolved it.
And is there any sense of the dollar value of this or cost?
I don't know about the dollar value. It's like I think eight... condos or apartments and a smallish restaurant. It's on a corner of Turnigan and Wisconsin, or Northern Lights and Turnigan Street,
Street.
Yeah. And so it's just kind of a large lot, but not a huge project.
Thank you. Let's go to Steve McDonald. Steve, we've been talking about disaster here, and there's another disaster that's ongoing in the Anchorage area, and that is the Matanuska River continues to swallow homes.
Yeah. This happens every so many years. You have glaciers melting and you have rain falling, and the rivers they swell up and they start getting over their banks, obviously. And that's what happened. We watched a couple, or at least one, go into the river a week or so ago. I think, they've tried. You can't tame these rivers at all. They've tried to see
these
if they can continue.
These are fast-moving braided rivers.
Right. They go where they want to go, and they take out whatever they want to take out. And this is just a clear case of the banks eroding and eroding from underneath these homes, and the homes go into the river. Unfortunately, we've seen it happen quite a few times over the years. I didn't quite understand. And the only question I really have about the whole thing is there was one house that we were out covering, and we watched it teeter on the edge. We actually saw it kind of flip into the water a little bit, and it stayed there for several days. They were talking about, well, if this thing slips into the river, we're worried about it hitting a bridge and damaging a bridge. We were wondering, why can't you just do something to pull that house back? It's going to be destroyed anyways. Why let it go into the river? We didn't quite figure that out. But also the homeowner was told that we can't really do anything about your insurance problem until it goes into the river. So it seemed a little backwards. They maybe could have saved themselves a lot of trouble had they pulled that thing back from the from what was inevitable anyways.
Steve, it seems like there's the merging controversy here over the question of who's responsible, individual homeowners, the government, or I mean, there could be several governments here.
Yeah, right. Well, people are allowed to build their homes on the river banks, and yeah, it's a great view and it's a great area. It's nice to live there.
And presumably this area is unzoned?
Yeah, that I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question at all, if it is unzoned or not. But people are allowed to live there. It's sort of like, well, I want to build my home in the Ninth Ward, just
and they're able to get
New Orleans
flood insurance there, or homeowners insurance.
I think they can. I'm sure they probably will pay quite a bit
premium,
more. Because this area is prone to being eroded away and homes falling into the river. So it's the same thing of living in the path of hurricanes each year.
Good comparison.
One could hit.
Well, let's not forget, we built all those houses over there on that land that was not supposed to be used over a Turnigan area.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
After there's an earthquake, we may be having this conversation again far as who's responsible for that.
Well, are the soils strong enough to support a housing development out there?
Thank you, gentlemen. Now let's go back to Sean. Sean, the Anthony Rollins, the police officer's lawsuits against him for his criminal behavior have now been settled.
Yeah.
And the bill is in, and it's more than $5 million.
Pretty small bill, actually, if you just ask me personally. We're talking five women. He was convicted of raping five women. Another six came forward in the civil suit, didn't want to be part of the criminal suit. So $5.5 million divided by 11 people who suffered various forms of sexual assault or just outright rape inside a police substation. In these day and ages, if it went to the jury, you would expect them to come back with a much larger verdict. So did the city do a good thing by settling? Of course, there's going to be pros and cons of that. I think it saved us some money in the long run. The city says it does have a fund for some of this. It's still figuring out exactly where all the money's going to come from, the $5.5 million to pay for it. Rollins got 87 years, so he's going to serve a minimum of 40 or 50 before he has a chance of probation. The victims now are considering suing him personally. He's got a pension. He owns half a house with his wife. But then, of course, they would have to go back on the stand for that. So they're considering their options. The real question for me is, what, if any, disciplinary actions have been taken within APD, within the ranks of APD? Because as their own investigation found, Rollins should have been more supervised. Now, they have made some changes because of the Rollins case. They're trying to get money to get security cameras installed in all the police substations, which is where he allegedly, or where he's been convicted now of doing the rapes. But the police found that he wasn't supervised enough and that people knew he had issues. Where's the responsibility there, and what has been done internally? And especially lately, we don't find out those things. So I don't know if we'll ever know if anybody was disciplined within APD other than Anthony Rollins over this.
And what would it take for us to learn more? Could somebody from the department or the mayor come forward and speak on this, or is this all privileged and
closed?
Well,
certainly he could. Usually in cases like this, and I'll bring one up with the fire chief, Mark Hall had some problems two years ago. All the mayor would say about that then was that he was disciplined and that it's a personnel issue. So you can kind of wrap yourself in that HR rule and say, I can't really talk about it. But at the same time, does the public have a right to know what has been done within APD? This is a pretty big problem. Obviously,
right.
If a cop can
get
away with this.
Criminal activity. Either one of you, Rose or Steve, want to comment on this?
I agree with Sean. I think in this case, who's going to wind up footing the bill for this? It's going to be taxpayers, property taxpayers. And I think property taxpayers are owed an explanation. And at least we should be told what steps the police department's taking to make sure this never happens again. I mean, it's a horrific crime and committed by a police officer, someone who is sworn to protect the public. There was a real violation here in more ways than one.
The conviction tells you that and the sentence tells you that.
Absolutely.
Steve, let's stick with you. Sarah Palin was invisible at the Republican National Convention after being the centerpiece at the center of the
2008
convention. What happened? How do you become invisible in 4 years?
There's no real clear explanation as to what happened. The GOP said she was invited to speak and invited to come to the convention. She declined to do that. She was 2,000 miles away in Arizona stumping for congressional candidates that she's backing out there. There's some speculation that maybe she didn't like the time slot that she was given to speak and didn't want to do that. But there's no real clear answer as to why she didn't come to the convention. And her explanation, she put out a news release through Greta Van Sestren's Twitter page, I think it was. But her release was something along the lines, my time was in 2008. It's time to give other voices in the Republican Party a chance to speak. And I'll be interested in listening to what they have to say. And that was her explanation. So that was, well, President Bush didn't speak. He wasn't invited. Mr. Cheney, Vice President Cheney, he wasn't there either, as far as I know. He wasn't invited to speak. So she wasn't the only one.
And hey, let's not forget, Hillary wasn't at the Democratic convention either. So
she's
gainfully employed as Secretary of State, absolutely. Yeah. But I just think that there are reasons maybe. As Steve said, who knows what's really happening? But I think there are reasons, both pro and con, for having her there and not having her there. I mean, she was in 2008, and Romney's trying to focus on Romney.
From going to you are where the action is to who? I've heard your name someplace.
Banned to the Arizona.
But we're out of time in any case. Goodbye.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.